You're now listening to the Inside Out Podcast with Jimmy Hunt. Get it.
Welcome to Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. My job is simple: to improve my mental fitness through any means possible and deconstruct what works, what doesn't, and what I think may be able to help you become mentally fitter. And quite often, it leads me to some pretty interesting people, places, and stories. And today, we have one of those pretty interesting people with us. It's Kimberly Crossman. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi. Can I start by asking, would you define yourself as mentally fit?
Yes, I would. Absolutely.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's sort of my whole last book and everything around, you know, what does mentally fit mean, right? So where are we trying to get to? What are we trying to do? Mm-hmm. And I can answer that question affirmatively because it's very simple. Fitness, whether it's mental or physical, is the same. What we need to be doing is putting in small, consistent amounts of effort over time in order to build up the level of fitness and therefore be fit. And without that small incremental, what they call the aggregation of marginal gains, without that momentum, that time spent, you cannot be fit. So if I said, hey, Kim, I want you to run a marathon tomorrow, how are you going to go?
Given that if I was to run 200 meters, I would cough up a lung, I would say relatively poorly.
Exactly.
I'd give it a nudge.
Yeah. Now, let's say we got you the best Hollywood trainer and we're not looking to do it with like legality, right? So we'll give you the best drugs, the best doping program in the world.
Perfect. How fun.
Can you run a marathon by next week?
Probably also no.
No, right? Because that's
God loves a trier, but no. Yeah.
But that's how fitness works, right?
Yeah.
And so there's no cheating your way through that. And when you ask me that question, immediately deflecting back to her role as a podcast host, when you ask me that question, no drama. This is a conversation anyway.
Well, you fascinate me. So as curious as you are about me, I'm very curious about you. But I think that's a good way to start because I wouldn't define myself that way yet. But you're someone who I aspire to be like. So this is the point.
This is the point, right?
Yeah.
If you want to become mentally fit, which should be a goal for most people, then all you've got to do is train. Train consistently, right? Because what most of us do is we will train sporadically, right? So let's say you do want to run that marathon, right? We do get you the best Hollywood trainer. We do dope you up to the gills, right? And we get you, and let's say it takes a couple of months or whatever, and you run the marathon and people are taking photos, cheering, well done, Kim, congratulations, you ran a marathon, right? And then I come to you 2 years later, and I say, hey, Kim, guess what we're going to do tomorrow? We're going to run a marathon. And you go, oh, fuck. I haven't run a mile since we did that last one. You're not fit anymore.
Mm-mm. Please also, for the record, never actually do this to me.
But that's just it, right? It's the same. Yeah. We might do a meditation retreat or a yoga retreat or a 30-day challenge or a 100-day challenge, right? And we get to the end and we're like, yeah, I'm real good now. And then you just stop. And so that's really, I mean, it's what I teach. It's the fundamental of what I teach, that this is a long game stuff that we're talking about. And it's not about what you can do. It's what can you do consistently over time? Because that is what defines you.
That's so good. Ugh. All right, let's start. This is good. We're in a good place. We're on the same page.
All right. And so, I mean, people will read the description. They kind of know who you are. You're an actress. Yeah. You're an actress. You do actressy things. and hosty things.
I love hosting conversations. I'm a curious conversationalist, not unlike yourself. I love performing. I have an addiction to that moment between action and cut because I have anxiety and depression. So it's like the only time my mind is quiet for some reason is like I'm hyper-focused between action and cut. And so I get out of my own way. I trust myself and I just have the most joyous time doing what I do as a career to the point that when I'm not doing it, whoa. My unhealthiest self.
Well, so that's the thing. Like both you and I happen to know a lot of actors.
Yes.
And they kind of fit into a particular barrel.
Okay.
And
what barrel am I in?
Well, the one you just described. Robin Williams, I think he said something early on around the problem with pretending to be someone else and then people loving that other person more than they love you because you've been projecting this person. And I think, and this is by no means a professional opinion, but from my observation, when you're always pretending to be someone else, whether that is professionally or just straight privately, which a lot of people do, when you're pretending to be someone else, it's very easy to lose track of yourself. And when you lose track of yourself, you can lose track of your self-esteem, your self-awareness, your self-love, your self-compassion. And when those things fade away, then we end up in that depression and anxiety territory. Did I put you in the right barrel?
Oh my God, not at all. I'm so stable. I'm like, I would say that I guess just to breathe some life into that for as it pertains to me, 100%. Like I am still struggling with this self-love element of loving my whole self. I don't particularly even like my negative mindset, my negative self-talk, my depression, like that part of me, Kim, is the part that I had previously never shown people. I'd been embarrassed to show people, not even my friends and family. If I was having a panic attack or a depressive episode, I would be so fearful to burden anyone with it that I would just deal with it myself. But what it then meant is that my relationships were never 100% truthful. Because I would never let anybody into all of me just because I was too scared. Like, how could someone love this version of me that is so, seems so foreign even to myself? I'm a very positive person. I just really battle this consistent negative self-talk, which now I'm aware of it. At least I was only diagnosed with depression and anxiety 2.5 years ago. So I'm aware that it's this constant kind of racket, but to get to that place of loving my whole self, I can't honestly today, sitting across from you virtually, even say that I'm there 100%. I'm getting better at it and trying to learn to have more empathy for it. But I felt, like you're saying, a real disconnect with that version of me. So I have high functioning depression. So it means that I just keep going and I don't allow myself to rest. I don't allow myself to be still because I knew in any moments of stillness, these thoughts or these feelings would come up. And that would usually be why I just throw myself into any work that I can do, whether it's paid or unpaid, keep myself busy because I feel important. I feel validated when I'm busy. And that's why this addiction to what I do, it's like performance. It's, you know, there's all the great things that come with being an actor. You're meeting creative people. You're meeting the best, most amazing creatives on the planet with wild ideas who have chosen a life less ordinary because the hours are crazy and, you know, that part of it. So then when you become unemployed and you're seeking out work, that was just such, for me, such a pendulum swoop to being like, maybe I'll never work again. What am I if I'm not an actor? That's my entire identity and really not loving myself fully and still working on that to kind of not have my identity and my job and my persona that I love most about myself, that version of me, and kind of chasing it at all times. So I'm really still working on that.
I wish I had a pen and paper. There's a lot to unpack there.
I know. Go for it. You can be my therapist. You have fully qualified to do that. Speak into it. And I encourage you to do so. I'm trying to be aware. I'm just not yet at that point where I think I'm getting better. And I'm gaining the verbiage to acknowledge when I'm having spouts of increased negative self-talk or, and usually I just have to just ask people for compliments. I have to outsource my validation.
That's something we talked about a few weeks ago, which was love languages. And both you and I are the same, as our number one love language is words of affirmation. Tell me I'm pretty. Tell me I did a good job. Tell me you love me.
Is yours because you have negative self-talk too, or are you pretty?
Not negative self-talk so much as was negative self-esteem more. Okay. Like I was never good enough. So I was a high functioning depressive, like you. I had the absolutely most, I wrote about this in my second book, basically. I think it was 2014. I wrote a best-selling book. I built the world's biggest water slide. I opened TEDx Auckland in front of 2,500 people. I fronted a national ad campaign for the biggest company in the country. I was a finalist for New Zealand Innovator of the Year for my slide design. And I was a finalist for New Zealander of the Year for my work in mental health. That was
what a great year.
No, fucking hated it.
Oh no.
Yeah. Real sad year. And you know why? Because the book didn't sell enough. The TED Talk didn't get enough views. The water slide didn't make enough money. That product I fronted sucked and died. And I did not win either of those two awards. I had a shit year.
Yeah, you're right. You are a piece of shit.
Exactly. Right. But that's where that talk comes in. Right.
And, yeah. Which is so funny. Cause as an outsider, I'm like, that's a great year.
Yep.
But yeah, not good enough. I get it.
Right. There's something you said earlier. There's sort of a good exercise, around if you take everything away, what's left. Mm-hmm. Right. So let's do a thought experiment, Kim.
Hey, go for it.
You're banned. You are no longer allowed to be an actress, host, presenter, or anything in that realm. You're banned from wearing nice clothes. You just have to wear one t-shirt, one pair of jeans. You can swap them out.
Can I clean them?
You can absolutely clean them. You can have multiple pairs of the same ones. You strip all of that sort of stuff away and then you get asked what's left, because we have, you know, we have these people like rugby players are kind of a perfect example, right? Where their entire identity is wrapped up in a sport. They've been playing it since they were 5 years old. Mm-hmm. They did everything they can to get to the peak of their sport and then they got dumped, mm-hmm. or they had a career ending injury. And they spiral into massive bouts of depression because they are nothing outside of that identity. Mm. And so it's worth asking the questions like, who are you outside of acting, of hosting, of being in front of people? And like for most people, it's like, I can't see that as a reality. That is just who I am. And it would be very hard. For example, although I'm currently just wearing a white t-shirt, it's got a picture of Lady Gaga on it. It's a rad picture.
Look, she looks awesome.
Yeah, it's a cool picture. I didn't even realize it was Lady Gaga when I bought the shirt. I just thought it was a cool shirt. But in general, I wear a lot of color and a lot of crazy clothes. The question is why? Why do I do that? And initially it was, hey, I just like dressing cool and, I like having lots of color in a country like New Zealand where the national uniform is black. And then you ask the question again, why? But why? And you're like, actually, if you get really honest with about it, I need words of affirmation. That's what brings my self-esteem up, because I don't have self-esteem without getting it externally. So I need people to say, hey, you look really good today. So I wear cool shit.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, but why? And you're like, because I don't really love myself. You're like, oh, there we go. the act itself is not good or bad. It is simply a symptom of how we feel about it inside. Just like depression and anxiety aren't diseases that we catch. They are symptoms of our internal makeup and how we're thinking, feeling, and acting. And so, you know, who are you outside of acting, Kim?
Such a great question, because I think I feel very fortunate that my career path is also my, where my talent lies and where my joy lies. So I see it more than just a career. It's like, it feels like what I'm supposed to do. So I would feel, with it lacking, it would be hard to consider a joyful life without that being an element. I think I could survive just fine. I also love animals. I'm a marine biologist. Like, I could find,
like, an actual marine biologist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could
You put that on your Tinder profile, don't you?
Dolphin trainer. I don't have a Tinder profile, but I would lead with that.
I know. But yeah, exactly. Dolphin trainer.
But I think I would find worth in other ways by being of service. I think that is perhaps something that's a consistent thread. But I would, I'd have to admit that whilst I feel like a lot of my identity is tied up in that, there are some consistently Kim things that I think I would make it through, but it would be a life half lived just because of the joy that I selfishly get from aligning what I feel comes so naturally to me and comes so naturally to you. Like, people's biggest fear can be public speaking. Like, my joy would be like all of that attention and just to like have be in a state of flow where the words come and it goes well. And like, I'm unafraid of embarrassment in that moment. Like, you know, I can call it out. And so, yeah, I think I've done that exercise because I knew that if it was taken away, or what if my dreams don't come true, I would feel incredibly unhappy. If this pursuit that I'm pursuing in America to get a certain type of job doesn't happen, oof. My therapist is like, I have to be okay with that narrative. And I'm really not. Like, to me, I'm like, no, I'll just double down and work harder. Like, that's not even an option for me.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit unhealthy in its pursuit, because I probably need to be open to different things, but
and there's nothing wrong with working hard, right? There's nothing wrong with absolutely having something you want to do that gives you joy and working very, very hard for it. No one gets down on that. But you also have to look at it and sort of understand it as a drug that we have.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, my favorite place in the entire world is on stage in front of thousands of people, entertaining and informing them to make them have better lives, because the purpose of my life is service. And, that is literally directly what I do. I am of service to others to make them happier and healthier. And I could do that without the performance part of it. But that is my drug.
What a waste.
Yeah, exactly. Why would I want to give that up, right? But the truth is, I have to be okay with that. So it's not about telling you have to give up the parts of you that are you and that are really good. It's about trying to understand what's left if you take those things away, right?
Yeah.
Because when we strip everything away, our core has to be whole.
Mm-hmm.
A whole core makes a happy and healthy life. Mm-hmm. And so when we can find that self-love, self-compassion, self-esteem and self-awareness, then that just allows us to do that job even better, right? Because imagine acting, or in my case, speaking on stage with more self-love. Well, then you can only pass that on. More self-compassion. You can only be better in dealing and being of service with others, right? And and so when you're on a journey like us, like, that's the job. That's the fitness. That's the getting up and going for a run every morning to train the marathon, is what exercises are we doing to find those particular things inside of ourselves, because they're not binary. You don't line people up and say you have self-love and you don't. you have self-compassion and you don't. They're all on a continuum and we all have varying amounts of them. But getting more of them, ha ha ha, that's the key.
That is the key. I totally hear you. And I've been trying to do the work too, because, you know, I'd been so single focused on my goals that I was being an unprisoned friend. I wasn't showing up in other areas. I would refuse to compromise possible opportunity of employment over, you know, I'd say being a friend, being a family member, there are certain things. So I'm trying to get more balance in my life so that I do feel a little more whole. There's a great line in an Ed Sheeran song that's like, like when he reaches his goals, but then he has to turn around and pick up his personal pieces. And I remember really like relating to that, because I'm like, I am so goal oriented that I am letting myself down in other areas. I'm not being vulnerable. I'm not having the relationships that I want to have, and I will be alone at the end of it, you know? So it has been a definite adjustment. I think in my 20s, I was just so fixated on achievement. That's my perfectionism coming through, that I was incredibly alone and creating a real petri dish for a lot of my anxieties and depression as well. So I was unhealthily in the pursuit of my dreams, and I'm trying to do it in a much healthier approach.
Okay, but here's the question around that, is that if you go inside and do the internal work, if you chip away day by day, increase your self things that I just described before, do you think you would have a better or worse chance at achieving your dreams?
So much better. Like, it's remarkable. Like, of course, because you're not, like, I was entering rooms and I was reeking of desperation unbeknownst to me, you know, because I needed the job, I needed the employment, but I was like, I'm such a good actor, they'll never tell.
Yeah.
And I remember a huge shift happened when I got my green card, which just made me more employable. I had a little bit of the weight off my shoulders and started kind of booking more work. And it was because I wasn't strangling these encounters and these experiences. So I am 100% prescribing to the do the work, and you'll be more desirable to hire just by your own, the way you carry yourself, I guess. So I've definitely noticed an improvement. It's just finding that balance too of like, I also am so hard on myself. So it's an interesting kind of dynamic when you're going in a room to be judged, when you sometimes, because you can't really control that, like you can't always every day feel like you're showing up at 100%. You know, there may be other elements that are going on in your life that you're trying to compartmentalize on that day, or but I'm learning to kind of enter rooms, and I'm just speaking about audition rooms here, where you're meeting people for the first time, you're about to perform to them, you're trying to present yourself in a certain way. And my perfectionism would always be like, look how polished I am. And what I've learned is entering a room and being a little bit more honest, like, honestly, I feel a little scatterbrained today because I really wanted to do a good job and then my cat threw up or what, and actually being a bit more honest has actually resulted in more of a dialogue and a little bit more stripping away that perfectionism that I used to kind of present up front, because it doesn't allow for conversational vulnerability. So it's a work in progress. I just am having to manage my people pleasing and my perfectionism as well as my vulnerability, and then be in a place to also perform. So it's just, there's a lot of like things I try to be aware of.
Yeah. There's a great quote that this monk said at this lecture I was at, which is, you don't pray for outcomes. And I was like, whoa, hold on. You do pray for outcomes. That's exactly what you pray for. And they said, no, you don't pray for outcomes, because who are you to know what's right? And so like, yeah, like so often you think you know what you want and what is right, and it turns out to be completely wrong, right? And so, you know, when we're in situations, whether it's an audition room or a job or a date or anything, letting go of the expectations that we know, that we think we know, if it's right or not, is a key point to allowing it to be what it needs to be. And
getting out of its own way kind of thing.
Yeah. And so when you understand that, when you walk in and you're just like, it'll be what it will be, then suddenly all the pressure comes off. And we don't have to be perfectionists anymore, because even if we're perfect and we didn't get it, who knew that that role was the right one anyway? Whatever role that is.
Yeah, a job or a date. If it doesn't go well, maybe the universe is dodging a bullet for you. Or exactly. You know what? I read something interesting that you might want to speak to. I just listened to another podcast. Not that I'm gonna. You should only be listening to both of our podcasts. No, I'm joking.
What's the other podcast?
It was the Deck Shaper podcast, but it was about this lady called Tracy Dennis Tiwary, Tiwary. And she was, it just for me, it was just this aha moment I had this morning that I wanted to share with you because I was curious of what your thoughts might be on it. She's trying to reframe anxiety. And the kind of light bulb moment that I had this morning was that in order to have anxiety, you have to be a hopeful person. Because if you're looking to the future, your anxiety comes from, it could be a good outcome or it could be a bad outcome and you don't know what's going to happen. So you have to have an element of hope there. Whereas if you just looked at it as it's going to be horrible and the world's going to end, that's your depression. But in order to have anxiety, you have to at least have some hope that it could go good or could go bad. And so it was just this light bulb moment for me while I'm trying to learn in this season of acceptance and understanding that my brain works in a very unique way. That was a really cool moment for me that I wanted to share and see if you had any notes on that. Is like, to be anxious, you also have to be capable of hope, which is a really beautiful way of looking at it, that it's not all doom and gloom. There is a positive outcome. We just tend to focus more on the catastrophizing one rather than it could also go well.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. I don't think there's much more to add to it. Because I mean, it's straight up true. My first therapist said, dumb people don't get depressed.
Right? That's good. Okay, so we're highly
into. No, what he means is ignorance is bliss, right? It's sort of the same as that. Hopeless people don't get anxious. They just get depressed, right? Mm-hmm. And so hopeful people get anxious because they have this sort of, I think like anxiety is something like the difference between your expectations and reality. That's what anxiety really is. And mm-hmm. so you expect, but it might not end up that way. And so there's all of this drama in between the expectations and reality. And I think that's one of the keys to the way I dealt with my anxiety, which is understanding expectations. There's a great quote, which is expect nothing, appreciate everything. Mm. And a lot of my sort of anger and sadness came from expecting so much from other people.
Oh my God.
Right. Yeah. And
I'm wincing because this has been the greatest source of my life's unhappiness. Treat others as you want to be treated. Well, I'm doing that. Why am I being treated poorly? Why is it going back to me?
Exactly. Because you have to understand what you can and what you cannot control. And so, you know, you can't control other people, their thoughts, their feelings, their behaviors.
Not out of lack of trying.
Exactly. But you can't control it. Their thoughts, feelings, behaviors, what they like, what they dislike, whether they like you, whether they dislike you. You can't control any of it. Mm. And, you know, like you said, not for lack of trying, and yet we try over and over again and are disappointed over and over again and don't learn our lesson. And so when you understand that you have to take away all the expectations and just appreciate what's given, then it doesn't mean that people are allowed to treat you poorly. What it means is that you get to make better, more logical choices based on an actual reality that you can comprehend. So you treat a person, I mean, both you and I are very similar in that, like, we'll give. I mean, you offered me a room in your house within 5 minutes of meeting you, which is awesome. I do the same. And so what we do is then we expect a particular response. And then when we don't get that particular response that we generated in our head, we get disappointed. Or we expect a particular response and then we get anxious that they're not going to live up to that response. And so it's the practice of removing the expectation that alleviates the anxiety and the disappointment. And if we appreciate nothing, and then they give us nothing, we go, meh, that was exactly what was going to happen. And if we expect nothing, and then they turn up and they're really lovely house guests and they do a really good job, then you're like, yay, what a really nice surprise. And so it's like, it is that simple reframe, but I want to reiterate.
It is tough for me.
I want to reiterate that so when you see a reframe in a podcast or anything like that, the way that I kind of, the metaphor is that what we're doing is we're looking for treasure, right? So, oh, we found a little piece of gold, right? And then we go, oh, this gold is really precious. And then we put it under our bed. And then we never do anything with it. And it just sits under our bed. And we're not really any richer because it's not actually doing anything for us, right? So what we have to do is when we get those nuggets, we have to go and spend them. We have to go and actually utilize them. And then that's where it falls back into the fitness metaphor. Or there's a saying, which is if you know, but you do not do, then you do not know, right? So if you know, so this woman gave you a little bit of insight this morning in this podcast, now you know. But if you do not do, then you don't actually know. Mm. And it's the doing that is the practice that is the fitness. And the more you practice a particular quote, insight, piece of treasure, the more you practice it, the better you get at it. And so me even explaining the expectations thing here, a lot of people at home might go, oh, yeah, that's really good. And then the next person in their life is going to fucking disappoint them. And they're going to go, that didn't even work, right?
Right, right, yeah.
Because it's a practice. You have to practice it. And that's where, again, in the physical fitness metaphor, you need a workout plan. You need to be doing particular exercises at different times of the year, at different times of the month, at different days of the week. And you practice them over time. Oh, I haven't practiced that one in a while. It might be getting a bit rusty. Bring that back into the workout repertoire. Get that one going again because the universe turned up someone who gravely disappointed me. Oh, shit, I better go practice that one again.
Yeah. It's the hardest thing for me to unlearn from my childhood of like...
Yeah, I'm sure.
My core value of like, yeah, treat others as you want to be treated, and feeling like I hold pretty low expectations for friends, family, lovers, all of that. And then still find a real imbalance of my ability and ease to love and be caring, and just like a real disconnect to understand that we weren't all born and signed like an agreement of how we treat each other. Yeah. Like that's still, I'm still constantly flabbergasted that I'm like, I thought we all agreed that we would be like good to each other, you know, like all these other rules that I thought that we were all on board with. And so it's a real like unwiring for me to accept it and understand it and not be like really hurt by it.
When they hurt you,
I give an example? And yep, then sure. You can be like, that's a ridiculous response. But in a previous relationship, I had a partner who would go to the fridge and make a sandwich and then come down and sit next to me and eat the sandwich. And in that narrative, my story is like, ow, I would have loved a sandwich. You didn't think of me. Like, I would never go to the fridge and make anything and never and not consider you in that process. Like, that was a real difficult. But from their narrative, it was nothing personal. They just made a sandwich.
They were hungry.
They were hungry. So, like, that is
welcome
kind of
to my wife and I.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But, like, and to me, I'm like, this is a real, like, core memory situation of me being like, you're not thoughtful. You're not considerate. My feelings are hurt. I would never do this. Like, how are we so not on the same page?
That goes back to that love languages thing, right? So my wife and I are very completely opposite. And so her number one love language is acts of service. And my last love language is acts of service. And so making a sandwich for the other person or considering them or thinking about them in that process of making the sandwich, that is an act of service. And because that is my lowest love language, that's very hard for me to think that way. And then because it's her number one love language, that hurts her the most, right? Mm. So acts of service might be up there for yours. And so, like, in terms of relationships, that's really in regards to, I have to learn that. That's a process that I've had to relearn. And so I have to, like, I'm a very individualistic to the point of selfish kind of guy, in that I'm selfless in terms of the world and the work that I do, but selfish just in terms of, like, this is my journey, my path. I'm getting what I need to be able to walk that path. And so I have to learn to look outside that in order to have a healthy relationship. But my question around that was, are you the type of person that when people don't live up to your expectations, or even sort of, like, hurt you in a kind of way, do you keep them around for fear of, like, not, like, losing people, or do you cut them off ruthlessly?
I don't cut anyone off ruthlessly.
No, exactly.
Yeah, that's not in my nature. And I think people inherently are good. And I don't believe when people make mistakes that or hurt me that it's out of malicious intent. I don't circulate myself around people who I believe are intentionally like, fuck you, I'm not going to make you a sandwich. Like, those people don't exist. I think a way of managing it for myself is I'm having to be better with my words to set up someone else for success in my life. Because I think that I've just kind of been receiving and getting hurt rather than actually taking accountability and front footing things by having a dialogue like, hey, just so you know, like, I really like eating together. Like, it's really nice to,
this,
like,
this is what I need.
If you're making a cup of tea, please always ask if I want one. I'll probably say no, but, like, I like to be thought of when you're like, and kind of, I think, and maybe this was part of my undiagnosed depression. I was looking for confirmation that I wasn't worth loving or I was a piece of shit, because that was my, like, narrative before I was diagnosed. That's how I believed and saw myself, that, you know, my dad left when I was younger, I'm unlovable, I'm easy to leave. Like, these were kind of the truths that I told myself. You know, I come from a family with a lot of divorce, like, that you can never fully trust anybody, that they can leave at any time, that people are unpredictable, always take care of yourself. So I've lived, you know, the first 30 years of my life thinking that I had to be entirely self-sufficient, because at any point, anything can happen and I can't rely on anybody. And what that did is it closed me off to a lot of love. And I would just, like, seek out relationships or experiences that would reaffirm that narrative. So I've really had to do a lot of work in knowing that I'm loved, because I'm a fun, lovable person. I'm actually very easy to love, but I just had this kind of, like, deep-seated narrative of trying to push people away. So it's been a big kind of adjustment to then not only flip that, but go to the point of setting myself up for success and others for success by using my words so that it's crystal clear on what I need. Therefore, if I say that and you don't make me the cup of tea, I then actually do have grounds or permission to be like, hey, I do feel hurt, because as you're aware, like, that was something that was really important to me. Yeah. But without that, I'm just kind of making assumptions, you know?
Yeah. No, I like that.
Sorry, that's, I talked at you for 5 minutes.
No. That's perfect. And it's, you know, it's kind of almost classic.
Unoriginal take. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's, you know, abandonment issues from divorces, which, you know, what are they? They're up in the high 50%. So pretty much more than half the planet have these sort of issues from people leaving them and then as a child and then that coming through. Mm. And there's a great quote, 0 to 18 fucks you up. Mm-hmm. 18 plus, your job to fix it.
Well, and that's true. And I think I fixed it, but I overcorrected to such a severe amount out of self-preservation, which is a lot of what, yeah, if you're not at therapy, like that's your body's natural response. Like if
absolutely,
you have those experiences as a child, if you do the ACE scale or whatever it is, whatever your experiences are, your body will kind of overcorrect. You know, my mom grew up in a very unpredictable family environment. So she is like very big on like control and needs to know where everybody, yeah, is, because that's her way of self-correcting, yeah, to make sure everything feels a little predictable. But she swung it so far that it's actually, it pushes, you know, we're working through, yeah, it pushes people away to some point, which is the opposite of the reaction that she wants, you know? So
exactly. So that was it. Her upbringing, you know, fucked her up in a particular way. And then we get the coping mechanisms for that. But they, you know, exactly what you said, they often swing far too far the other way. And we have to, yeah, become aware of them enough to be able to bring that back to a reasonable level. Because there's, yeah, nothing wrong with having, you know, some control. There's nothing wrong with, yeah, having these particular mechanisms, you know, but it's when they go too far. And it's the recognizing and then correcting of that, that is really, really important.
And the unlearning and the exhaustion to unlearn habits and stuff, which is exactly, yeah, what you're saying, this fitness. It is a lot of work, but I do think, I mean, you're a testament to this. Like if you do the work, like
best thing you ever
what
did.
A euphoric life you can have, and you're just operating at a higher frequency and you have more intimate, fun relationships with friends and everything. Cause you're just, yeah, such a more in line state of flow human. So
Yeah, exactly. And it's why I just harp on about it, like being fitness. Like it is just, I mean, you're early 30s, I'm early 40s. Like you've got 10 years to get to this. And I only started this game, you know, at 31. And I turned 42 last week. So I've been going basically.
Happy birthday.
Thanks. No one knew.
Okay, sorry.
It doesn't matter. Okay. But so like 11 years I've been doing this work, and obviously I just keep getting better because I just keep doing the work, yeah, and I just keep getting fitter. And that's the thing. So 42, as a side note, is going to be the year that I am physically fittest, in my life. Which is a whole other thing.
Why? Secrets.
That's all right. I released it on my birthday.
Oh, you did? Okay.
instead of actually telling everyone it was my birthday, I just said I'm going on my big walk. So yeah, so that's cool. But it's the same process, right? I need to walk 3,000 kilometers. And so if I just turn up on day one without having walked anywhere, I'm probably going to be in a little bit of trouble.
You'll get it.
Yeah. And so I've got to start putting in consistent effort over time in order to get the results that I need. Mm-hmm. That's what we're doing. You mentioned podcast earlier. You're listening to Dax Shepherd's podcast, who also does great podcasts with our friend David Farrier. You have a podcast. It's called Pretty Depressed.
As I'm cool pretty name. And depressed.
Yeah. I wish mine had my Inside Out. It's a good title. I like the title. But my first book had a good title. My first book was called A Bit Mental.
Right.
And awesome. That would still be a great title for a podcast, but I just sort of felt like I'm past that. I'm in the mental fitness stage now rather than the,
yeah,
mental illness stage. You know, your podcast, very good. Because you're kind of famous, you've got some really cool guests on there who talk about some really cool stuff. What sort of thing does your podcast play in your healing?
Oh my gosh. So I had to make a commitment to do an episode a week because exactly like you're saying, I was kind of banking a lot of episodes. And so I would be having like these discussions are really healthy for me because it kind of opens up new doorways in my brain of thinking of things. And it is a form of my therapy and I'm quite happy to do it openly. I'm not ashamed of anything as you are. And, you know, I've seen and heard that they've been helpful and having transparent conversations can be helpful to others. So to me, it's part of my weekly routine to seek out someone that I want to speak to. And very similar to you, see where the conversation goes and flows. I always learn something. Everyone's journey on this is so unique. But for me in this season, what I'm really trying to work on is having a little bit more understanding, knowledge, and empathy for the different facets of mental health. Spoke to a lady a couple of weeks ago about OCD, but her OCD presented as intrusive thoughts, which was something I hadn't really even understood before, where basically, like some people might have a physical OCD where they have to kind of drink before they speak or do that as a tick. Hers was coming as like unwanted, overly sexualized thoughts about anyone and anything at any moment. And it was consuming her to the point that she felt predatory. She thought she was unsafe for others. So it's just a different form of OCD that she had to get treatment for. But for me, I'm like, I'm really excited and passionate about learning it all these different ways it presents. Because whilst, yes, in the time that I've been doing this podcast and the time that you've been on this topic, we've moved so far and we're moving so far forward with understanding and losing stigma. But there's still such a stereotypical depression, a stereotypical OCD. And so there are all these other facets of things that I want to shine a light on and understand myself so that therefore I can better service these conversations with more knowledge about how it can present to people. And also what's really interesting is how people choose to medicate. Talk therapy isn't for everyone. So also opening my mind up to different ways that people medicate, good or bad, and work through things and try and act as kind of a vehicle, as similar to you, of like opening people's minds. Because especially as Kiwis, you know, still talk therapy is a little bit like, woo, you know.
Just shut up, Kim.
Yeah, sure. Fucking hard enough, man. Take a concrete pill. And that's not me dissing Kiwis. I think it's just, you know, these kind of conversations are far more fluid and common here in Los Angeles, as I'm sure perhaps they are where you are in Mexico as well, just because of the type of people who are seeking out.
Mexico's worse. I'm sorry.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Mexico has a thing called machismo. And machismo is basically, you know, machoism or toxic masculinity, and it's kind of their thing. And so especially men, obviously.
I would have thought though, in the towns that you're in, you're attracting a lot of surfers and yogis and stuff like that.
My town wasn't like that until 2 years ago, when Mexico did not require vaccinations to turn up. And so when Bali and Thailand and everyone closed, lots of people came here. Now we have a lot of those sorts of people. But yeah, so that's the tourists. Yeah, the tourists are open-minded and talking about that sort of stuff. But the locals, still very steeped in Catholicism. And don't talk too much about it. In regards to your podcast, though, like in terms of you and the actual things that you learn from people, do you then actually go away and apply those, or do you, you know, have you learned lots of things from those people?
100%, especially early on, because I never planned on releasing any of the episodes. I just was like literally seeking out a way to fix my depression. And unbeknownst to me, in an episode talking to my friend Mia, has a very real-time reality of learning that this is a lifer and I just have to learn to work with it, not against it. So that's a fun episode. There's been so many things. Learning about safety and sexual encounters has been a big thing for me. I have gone through lots.
Big one for so many girls.
Yeah, lots of situations. I'm sure most girls have had experiences with consent issues or not giving consent. I certainly had my experiences with that. And then learning about how to find pleasure around safety, also being, you know, in the public, I'm being like quite conservative growing up in terms of my mom being a ballet teacher and, you know, perfectionism and never really feeling in my body, and sex more being as a service or transaction that I would do to gain love rather than really ever feeling in my body enough to like find pleasure.
We did a good episode a couple back with a lady called Morgan Penn, the sexologist.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah, that's worth a listen for you or anyone else in that regard, in that space.
Yeah. So yeah. I spoke to a lady who she has something called the orgasmic arc. She is a master of the orgasm and self-pleasure, which is something that I've always felt like wildly uncomfortable about. And so, you know, I think I'm really using selfishly the format of this podcast to seek out those opportunities to speak to someone in order to learn some tokens for myself. So yeah, it definitely is. There's a self-serving element to this for sure.
And so there should be. You know, the principle, I can't remember who it was originally, but the idea is that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Mm-hmm. And originally that was in an economic context.
Oh.
So when you, like, if you're in business and you hang out with five millionaires, right? They're the five people closer, but you're broke. Well, then very quickly, they're going to teach you things. They're going to cut you into deals. They're going to mentor you and they're going to bring you up. And so, you know, you will be the average of their income. Mm. But it works exactly the same with, you know, the social aspect of it. And that if you're Kim Crossman, bubbly and lovely, and you spend all of your time with five fuckwits, very soon you will become a fuckwit.
Mm-hmm. I've gone through seasons of that too, where I felt like I don't feel elevated or I feel my light dimming. And it's usually a reflection of the company that I'm keeping as well.
Yeah. And so we can go the other way, which is what I'm alluding to in regards to your podcast, right? Mm. So you're choosing to spend, this is quality time. Like this is one-on-one, vulnerable, deep conversation time with interesting, uplifting, beautiful, engaging people. And that can't do anything but good things for you.
No, totally. I'm just smiling because I'm like, you're I hope I become more like you. Let's keep talking for hours and I'll just suck more delight out of this.
but this is the whole point, right?
Yeah.
Suck it. Because it is the same as a candle. My candle lighting your candle doesn't take away from my flame. Like we're just lighting other bloody candles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and this is one of the things in terms of sort of mentors and mentees, right? So let's just say you end up in a group where you the dynamic is kind of the five people above you are sort of ahead, or they're who you want to become, right? Mm-hmm. As a mentee, most of us feel like we are takers. And people like you and I really don't like to feel like we're taking. We like to feel like we're the ones giving all the time, right? But you just think about it. You just do a little mental gymnastics, a little thought experiment, and you go, well, when I get to their place, which I will get to, I will get there. When mm-hmm. I get to their place and somebody comes into my group who was where I was, am I going to be looking at that person going, they're just taking from me? Mm-hmm. Of course you're not. Of course you're not. You're going to look at them and go, hey, you're a nice human doing nice things, but you could be where we are. I'm going to give you and tell you everything I know to help you out. And so as soon as we can get away from that dynamic of thinking that we're takers, it allows us to open up and enter into circles that can lift us up.
Mm-hmm.
That's important.
I love that. Hey, do you know your like three core values? Have you done that?
Yes, I did a whole episode on core values. Can I remember them off the top of my head? No. No, I cannot.
You cannot?
No. Literally, you put me on the spot and I've forgotten about them.
Okay, you think
about
it.
I have very strong core values.
Well, I only recently did this exercise. For anyone listening who doesn't know what it is, you can find it anyway. There's basically a list of 200 words and you get someone to read them out. And if you feel like it could be one of your core values, you write it down and you get a list, and then you have to keep narrowing that list down till you end up with three.
I've done it. There's a podcast episode.
Okay. I'll go back and listen
remember.
To it.
I can't remember.
But I recently did mine and I'm sharing it because I know we're almost out of time, but it's been the thing that has changed my life most in the last few months was just finding this clarity. And of course, through seasons of your life, this might change. But just even in the people who have come into my life, like yourself most recently, my core values were generosity, curiosity, and humor. Yep. And even just knowing that about myself, I really struggle with letting people go in my life and people coming in and like prioritizing people who just come in over people who have been there my whole life. So it's been a really good, in a season of kind of clearing out and moving into a new chapter, it's been a really cool exercise to do, to go, cool, these are my core values. Are the people around me, do they align with them? To which obviously you, Jimmy, 3 out of 3. But yeah, just a cool exercise. So, okay, I'll have to go and listen to your episode. I'll listen to it and I'll tell you what yours are.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't imagine they're probably too dissimilar from mine.
No, I mean, I just have very, very, I just have very, very strong values, and like honesty is one of them. Mm-hmm. I just want people that, I mean, so my wife knows this, it's the reason I married her, is that my absolute number one word that drives my life is lovely. Lovely. I just want to be around lovely people.
Mm.
Like, you have lovely conversations, you do lovely things, and life is lovely. Yeah. And so I don't really compromise on that too much. It's one of the reasons why I have 10 to 1 female to male friend ratios.
Wow.
And this is serious. Like, guy, well, I mean, there's a few reasons to it. Guys aren't usually lovely. They're not. Mm-hmm. Some of them are, and I am happy to be friends with them. Mm-hmm. They don't usually open up, and they're not very vulnerable. And so therefore, it's very hard to have real conversations with them and honest conversations with them, because you just feel like you're lying to each other all the time. And so, like, I really know who I surround myself with, and it dictates who I work with, who I talk to. There are a bunch of people who people would like to have on this podcast, and I'm just not going to interview them because they're not lovely. Because I know them, I've met them, they're not lovely. And therefore,
I made the cut.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. You are lovely. And so, yeah, that's why I'm friends with you.
Yeah, I love it. That's such a great way of like having one word. Oh my gosh, that's even better. But yes, lovely is a great one.
Yeah.
That's a good way to walk through life. I might steal that one.
Go ahead again. We're not stealing anything. We're not taking from other people.
I'm just using it.
Exactly. Exactly. The biggest point of all, if you know, but you do not do, then you do not know.
Exactly. I love that. I've got so many tokens from this. I'm like, okay, come on. I'm going to do this. I'm doing that. Okay.
Yay. All right, Kim Crossman, that's the end of this.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
I love you too. If people would like to know more about Kim Crossman and the stuff that she does, where would they find you?
I'm on the internet, on Instagram.
Oh, me too.
Crossman. I'm on there. And on Facebook @Facebook.com/ Kim Crossman 24, because someone already had my name.
How dare they?
How dare they? Who would have thunk? But yeah, or you can listen to my podcast, but
yeah, pretty depressed.
Find yourself there. There's lots of animal stuff. So. Force feeding you animal content and facts is another thing of mine. But thank you so much. Honestly, it's been such a pleasure and joy to spend some time with you beyond our chat at the airport, which just filled me with delight. But yeah, you're a treasure. And I'm just so excited about your long, big walk. And I can't wait to talk to you afterwards and just pick your brain about highs, lows, and all the things you learn along the way.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you are looking forward to hearing about it. My wife is fucking sick of hearing about it already.
Okay.
So she's like, yeah, please someone else talk to him about it. So I don't have
I nominate myself as tribute.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, if you're in New Zealand at the time, come walk a section.
Okay, I will. I'll get my fitness up.
Do it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening today. We loved having you here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining in. And we'll see you all again next time. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
That was Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. See you next time.